This is huge. This is absolutely huge. You could see Mbolo there. He did move his leg to make sure it hit Paredes.
After review, there is no foul for number 5. And number 7, there is a clear simulation. Final decision, yellow card to number 7.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And in that instance, all hell is going to break loose here. Switzerland are absolutely furious.
Ian Dark. Man, if you love, if you're somebody that is annoyed with announcers constantly and have loved almost every moment of the broadcast in the World Cup, then we are best friends. Just the way some of these, Ian Dark especially, John Strong, who's the top guy for Fox, Derek Ray, Hargraves, and Fletcher, all of them are so keen. I'm leaving, what's Jackie's last name? She's great too with Warren Barton. I've done this before and I was embarrassed. They're all so good. In fact, real quick, I want to get a call in on the Sabres. And by the way, according to Chad DeDominicis, they're hiring John Davidson as an executive. That John Davidson, who's been Columbus, MSG, Rangers goalie, been around for decades. We'll have to look into that. World Cup announcers. What? Where was I? Maybe it can wait. I want to talk about the replay and everything like that. It can wait. I lost my train of thought on this other Sabres news, but they're all so good. I just... So many football announcers and hockey announcers just really don't, by their words, care about either the words or the truth. And when I'm listening to Landon Donovan, John Strong, so many of these soccer guys, they definitely care about both things. There's just no wasted words. This is really where I'm at. It's clever. It's insightful. It's just so good. John Strong has a particular trait that I really admire. This is what I dislike strenuously about Chris Fowler and several other like top play-by-play guys. Listen to a promo of a baseball broadcast and the play-by-play announcer sounds like he's literally screaming and it's game 52 of the season. There's no context, and like Fowler gets the national championship game, he gets Wimbledon, or maybe he doesn't anymore. He gets top events, but when he raises his voice, you can feel his spit on your face. It's just gross. It's so loud and like in the red that the greats never, ever sound like that. They know how to raise their voice and their level without shouting at you. And Fowler is the type where he is just like spitting at you. He's so, so loud. John Strong. Listen to a highlight of his goals. They're all perfect. And it's not even like that word. He's not Ian Dark. He's not somebody who's using his lexicon to great lengths, but it sounds just right because he's able to raise his voice, but not be shouting. And that is a great trait. And he is the absolute deserved number one guy for Fox. And every time I turn on a World Cup game, which I've almost watched them all in segments, I get Strong and Holden. I'm just delighted immediately. Like this is perfect. And they're flying all over the map. He'll have one of these games probably tomorrow. I would guess he'll have one of these games in the semis and then the finals on Sunday. And I can't wait. All right. We'll get to soccer again later. Here's Greg next. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Fine. You're welcome.
Yeah. So I think where I'm at with Hellebuck trade rumors, it's kind of revolving around team confidence, like front office Sabres confidence versus like fan confidence. I feel like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 Sabres fans would probably tell you like, yeah, we're making the playoffs next year. I'm pretty confident. But then is the team confidence the same way? Like if they feel totally confident that they're making the second round or maybe even the third round, if they get lucky, why I guess the Hellebuck move would have to be behind that. I feel if they're not fully confident in next year and they're saying, oh, it may just be a fluke, or this season was a fluke, next season I don't know if we're going to be getting to that level again, then maybe they do roll out the same three goaltenders. I don't know. But we're getting into weird kind of Brandon Bean territory where it's kind of like, oh, we're going to test the waters and we're going to reach out to other GMs and we may be in on Miles Garrett, or we may be in on, you know, at one time it was Justin Jefferson. I don't know. But it's like, is that Yarmo's strategy? I don't know. But that's what I'm thinking.
Can you stay with me for a minute here?
Because sure.
I think the logic works the other way. If not also, I think the logic works the other way. I think if the Sabres are in on Hellebuck, which I think they are, the logic is instead to take it up a level, to take a second round team that did not get great goaltending when it mattered the most. Maybe it wasn't terrible. To the cup. And if they like who they have, then they might think they don't need to bother.
You think it's the
other way around?
I think it's the other way around because it's kind of like, okay, the playoffs start today for the next season. I'm just like playing a game, I guess, where the playoffs start today and you look at your lineup, same as what you and Bulldog like to do, where you have a lineup today and you're basically like saying, I want to have a goaltender that I'm confident in. Wouldn't I want Hellebuck there to say that, okay, I can go up against Tampa, Florida, Montreal, whoever I'm facing, and say, yes, I'm fully confident that he gives us the best chance? Or do you want to roll out UPL and Lyon again and just like cross your fingers and hope?
No, I mean, yeah, that's the point. Thanks, Greg. I think why you trade for Hellebuck is a bet on, I've got a great roster and now I need a great goalie and come at me. And I don't hate that. I mean, I've never been invest in goalie guy, but like, I get it. Not to mention how exciting it would be. And I loved a point from today's morning show where it was said, imagine this is being reported as true. Like, imagine you have a superstar in the league and he wants to play for you. And you're Buffalo. I mean, when has it ever happened that like we're turning that down? You don't need to be a slave to that. Now, I don't know. I think the reason you get him is if your bet is, I love my team, but my goaltending wasn't good enough, and now it will be. And I'm somebody, I know how Paul has talked many times, and I think it's fair. The history with Hellebuck in the playoffs, I just don't care. I never stray from this. Hockey, football, baseball, whatever. I think games are games. I think, you know, even players talk differently and we all attach a much greater significance to it. I don't think the Sabres lost because they were scared. I don't think that was going to be a problem in the first place. And they went and beat Boston. And I think probably you still had people writing the epitaph as if they were just like not experienced enough or something like that. Why? Because that goal went in? I'm never changing on this. There's no reason for me to change on this. I know how we write stories with sports. Otherwise, maybe we wouldn't care. We need for there to be stories. But I think games are games. I think at the professional level, when you get that far in life, in a sport, and you have only made it that far, unless you're a prodigy, even then, you've only made it that far by learning how, as a child, and then a teenager, and then a young adult, how to be able to compartmentalize your emotions and focus and go shift to shift. That's why I think momentum is garbage. I think, soccer's obsessed with momentum, by the way. I mean, even at the intermissions, they're asking, who has the momentum? Will somebody ever say, who cares? Who has the ball at this point? Like, it's just why I think so much of it all is garbage. It doesn't all have to be completely meaningless, but a lot of it comes close. Really, I've got, you know, a team of professionals that know how to get ready to go to work, and you skate your shift and you sit down and you're thinking about the next one. And I think those guys are so trained to be able to do that. This point is only, I mean, I could go on forever and I'm sure it's annoying, but it's really just to say that I don't care about somebody's playoff past. It's all well and good to point out that Sergei Bobrovsky was a lousy playoff goalie until he wasn't. Well, let's try to learn something from that. What happened? Nothing happened. He just did better the next time. Like, it's all kind of how sports is. But, you know, if you want to write a story that he learned something, and he'll probably take your question and say that he did, because that works for everybody, okay. I don't care about Hellebuck's playoff history. I just watched him win gold for Team USA. Was that not high pressure enough? Is playing for Winnipeg in a playoff series against Minnesota higher stakes than playing for the gold medal? I'll hang up and listen. So that part of it, and that's not really where the caller Greg was coming from, really, like his playoff pass. I just know that I don't care at all. And I'm ready for him to prove that different the next time, because guys always do. And like, then we'll go to someone else and pick on them for their playoff past. I don't even think Luukkonen or even Lyon. Lyon was good. Luukkonen was fine. Lyon was good until game six in Montreal. And then we got to pull him. I mean, really, it's just so random. Don't care about Hellebuck's playoff past. I'm not building any argument on Luukkonen based on the game seven goal or any of his playoff performances. I don't care. I think, you know, those guys are both to varying degrees proven good to great players. But if I'm the Sabres, like I was saying to the caller, if I'm the Sabres and I'm, you know, in a meeting, which now perhaps would include John Davidson, who was a goalie and has been an executive with Yarmo for many years in Columbus, like they must see him as an important voice. And I'm going to stereotype myself right now by saying, which side do you think he'd be on? Go get your star. Go get your goaltender. And go from there. And the Sabres can afford it. They can afford it financially. They can afford it by their roster. It's just a matter of coming to terms if Winnipeg is ready to move him, which I think it is. I think it sounds like every time you look up, there's another Connor Hellebuck trade rumor. And if Winnipeg is ever ready to shoot that down, feel free. They don't. So if you're ready to go win and you think you've got the team to do it, which I think the Sabres are entitled to think, then it's Connor Hellebuck time. And what a rise that would get out of the fans. And maybe the locker room. And maybe the entire hockey world, the NHL world. It's like, okay, Buffalo, I guess you meant it. And we have just almost never been able to feel that. If you think you're going to struggle to make the playoffs, then that's another question, but I don't think really that has to hinge on who your goaltender is. I mean, it was really close. The Sabres ended up in first place, but, I mean, what were they ahead of fifth place? 10 points? Wasn't it like 109, 106, 106, 199, maybe the top five in that division. I mean, that's a couple of games, head-to-head losses to the team that finished fourth or fifth. Then you flip it. Whether it's anything about the regular season or not, I mean, the Sabres are not going to be considered less of a favorite if they trade Jack Quinn and a first and who? Mertka for Connor Hellebuck. Nobody's dinging them in the odds. Instead, they raise, it's eyeball emojis all over hockey. And you know what? I think it could make sense. I think they're in a spot, in a vacuum, they're in a spot where this is defensible. And they don't live in a vacuum. They live in Buffalo, which never does that, which makes it even more exciting. They're more of a Stanley Cup favorite with him on the team, no matter what they give up. With all the love we want to, and you know, time spent fawning over, I couldn't think of the word, time spent fawning over Hellenius and Östlund and Kulik, they're more of a favorite with Hellebuck. Well, Lukanen's in that trade too, right? I like the three-team trade idea, but it's harder to pull off. You don't really ever see it unless you're in the NBA and they make 16 trades. Which to me is insane. I can't even imagine a 16 trade in fantasy. I've done three teamers before, and then you get napkins out and try to figure out different ideas. Six teams seems like a dare. Mike Schoep here. Bulldog is off 803-0550. Thank you, Greg. This is WGR.
I am not going to lie to you guys. It is down to Buffalo and Chicago. I know that, obviously, because I spoke to him. But it's a tough decision for him. It really is. You know, whether to go home, make it easy on his parents and his family and his friends and finish like he did, or like, you know, kind of like Taser tried to do, or he comes back. And in my opinion, you know, he's a Blackhawk.
Chris Chelios says Patrick Kane's down to Buffalo and Chicago, and he says, because I talked to him.
Right.
Seems pretty believable.
Yep.
Jeremy and Joe, good morning, everybody. Owen's here, Joe Kelly's here.
The part about Chelios talking to him, or the part about the Sabres being believable?
Well, I mean, believable because Chelios
says
that. Like, who's your source? His answer is Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
I talked to him.
Yeah.
It's between Buffalo and Chicago, and I talked to him. Does that mean there's an offer for him, and if he just says yes, he's on this team? I think that's what that means. That,
yeah,
he, your call, man. Here's our offer. Do you want it? Here's their offer. Pick your offer. Pick your team.
Unless it means he wants to come to Buffalo. They're like kind of in, and there's no offer on the table. He's waiting for them to give them something. I guess it could be that.
I mean, I feel like
it could be the Sabres saying, hey, we'd like to have you. We don't have a spot, so unless, like, you'd have to wait for us to make a trade.
Well, that might be true, too, but as soon as he says yes, they would do it. I mean, for Chelios to say it's up to him and it's a tough call, I think the most likely scenario way that he lays it out, I wouldn't say that unless I had an offer from two teams and I was picking between the two teams.
Right.
The Sabres will open the season in Columbus. Mm-hmm. And then come home for Chicago Saturday, October 3rd. That is banner raising night.
Mm-hmm. So, and Patrick Kane will be playing in that game.
He will, if he picks one of these two teams.
Yeah.
Jordan Greenway and Bo Byram tribute on the board.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greeny. Thanks, Bo.
Mm-hmm.
How would Patrick Kane fit? Multiple forwards would have to leave, probably. At least, I mean, we're already talking about a team that is overloaded at forward. And they just signed Krebs to an extension. And I'm just like over here thinking, is all this because of Hellebuck? Because they're going to send a second-line center and a second-line winger, you pick who those are, to Winnipeg for Hellebuck. There was a contract signed yesterday. You tell me who it was, because I saw it's a good comp for Jack Quinn, like $6 million per year.
Cole Perfetti from the Winnipeg Jets.
He signed in Winnipeg for $6 million. That's like, oh, there's your Jack Quinn future contract. Do you want to commit $6 million to Jack Quinn?
All right, Perfetti had 32 points in 68 games last season, which is less than what Jack Quinn had.
Okay, so Jack Quinn's a $6 million player. And mm-hmm. His name has been reportedly out there quite a bit this offseason. We've heard of his name mentioned by a number of insiders. If you're identifying that you're not going to pay that guy, I don't know if Winnipeg will either, but I feel mm-hmm. like I'm just, of all the players that you would think Kane would directly replace,
mm-hmm.
who's the number one name?
Jack Quinn.
Yeah.
Right? Definitely Jack
Quinn.
An
offensively tilted player that can help you on the power play. And
which Quinn doesn't do. You would want him to do that for the role. You would probably think, hey, the type of guy that Jack Quinn is, which is an offensive dynamo that can produce offensively, but you aren't really sure what he's giving you in every other department. That type of guy on your team, you want to produce for you on the power play. And he doesn't. So Kane would ideally give you what Quinn does 5-on-5 and then give you more than that on the power play, and then you would be talking about an immediate upgrade. If you don't plan on giving Jack Quinn a long-term deal for, right, if it's $6 million per year, then what do I care that he's younger? Because all that matters now is, what are you doing for me this year? Because if this is a short-term relationship, he might as well be 35 years old,
yeah.
Jack Quinn. So I think Kane would fit if you're replacing that guy or Some, I mean, if they want to move McLeod off the team because Oslin's going to play third line center, like whatever, you got to move a forward out for Kane to come in. There's no other way about it. You're not going to healthy scratch another guy on top of already having a hard time figuring out who you are going to healthy scratch. But I could see why they would want him. They need power play help, and it's hard to get power play help if you don't bring in any new forwards. Which is what this offseason has been, right? Like there's not a single forward on this team at the beginning of next season that was not on the team last year other than Yuri Kulik. That's it. So if you want to improve in that area, then you would look at Kane for that. But my question would be, okay, well, if you really want Kane and that might be the reason why you want him, and the Hellebuck trade doesn't happen, what am I doing? Am I trading a Quinn or a McLeod for a pick and a prospect just to clear the space? Because then it becomes not just would you rather have Kane or Quinn, would you rather have Kane and whatever I'm getting for Jack Quinn?
Mm-hmm.
Would I rather have Kane and a first-round pick, or would I rather have Jack Quinn? That's really what you have to weigh.
You also wonder what kind of term Kane has. Like when he signed in Detroit, his last contract was a 3-year deal. Right?
I thought it was smaller than that because okay. I thought he re-signed, but his first deal I thought was...
3, and then another one after that? All right.
Yeah, he is coming off a 1-year, $3 million deal, after a 1-year, $4 million deal, after a 1-year, $2.75 million deal.
Okay, so it's been 3 years...
Of 1-year deals.
Okay.
And last year it was $3 million.
What would it be this year? Similar? 2.5?
I'd hope so.
You'd think it'd be something pretty manageable.
Three, maybe it's just 3 again?
Maybe.
Cap's gone up.
But that sounds like it's up to him. So I almost wonder, again, like if he says, yes, let's do that, and then the Sabres have to start pulling levers. Like, all right, well, make the call to move out who? I want to bring up something that Paul mentioned to us last time we talked to him earlier this week, which was something that he does not think they will do. But I want to – maybe we'll talk about this with Joe Yurden at 8 o'clock. Should I at all prepare myself for the Sabres not having the right deal done yet? So at the start of the season, like Hellenius is in Rochester and Oslin's in Rochester because Man. They can? Guys.
This organization cannot operate that way.
It's about asset. If it's about asset management and we don't have the right deal yet, but we're going to get there and we've got all this depth and it's just a numbers game, like – I don't want it to happen either, but Paul pointed out like those guys can go to Rochester.
Can't you not possibly do that because your whole thing this offseason was, well, we didn't get a big move. We didn't re-sign Tuck. We didn't do all this stuff because we have so much faith in these kids being able to do it. And if the kids aren't there to do it, then you just purely got worse.
I'm with you. But what we're talking about are our justifications. And mm-hmm. in the moment, it might not be their plan A, but what would they say about it if they got to that spot? I don't think it's likely.
I cannot see that happening. If
Kane says, yes, I want to be a part of this year, whether it's trying to win a Stanley Cup, something that will not happen in Chicago. Chicago, you're just going there.
No, yeah.
Right. The Sabres open against Chicago, by the way, and Connor Bedard is not going to be ready at the start of the season.
No.
He's not. He's not playing in that game.
Right. Great news.
Right.
I was immediately thinking about the timeline for Bedard. Like, Chicago's not winning the Stanley Cup. We know that.
No.
They're coming off, one of the bottom seasons in the league. So he's going there just to play, go back to Chicago, retire, be a Blackhawk. Okay. Or you can, try to do something special here, I suppose. I don't know the numbers defensively. I'm sorry, from a forward standpoint. No, from a defensive standpoint, we know what they are.
Yeah. I have to think that even just the fact that they are still – to whatever degree they're in this, to the point where Kane is telling people I'm deciding between Chicago and Buffalo, to me that has to mean that Buffalo is telling him we're doing something here. There's going to be a spot.
Yeah.
Because you don't do – like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't put Kulik or any of those guys in Rochester for a game, even if it meant getting Kane on the roster now and not having to do anything else. I'm not sacrificing that. It's not – the way that they've gone about operating here, it would go against everything Yarmo has said about not rushing things and setting the organization up for success. How do you do that right now? You make sure that those kids have a place to play. because that is what you've been touting as your sort of, this is our ticket. These kids are special, and that's what's going to like help us replace all these things we lost.
It's interesting, like as we sit here, like what you're touting. Let's look at the things that they tout. They also tout their defenseman as their superpower.
Sure.
And they lost a defenseman, and they have not really I guess Olin Zellweger is going to be their replacement.
We're crossing our fingers.
I think that's a savvy move.
Okay, good.
That you could believe is genuinely going to be Byram.
Their other superpowers have been the three-goalie system and the goalie rotation, something that they basically dumped when they got to the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
So I always want to be careful to take teams for what they are doing with what versus what they wish they could be doing.
Right.
What does Yarmo really want? He wanted Colton Parayko. He doesn't have Colton Parayko. All right, so he's on to something else. What did he want from a forward standpoint? Does he want Dylan Larkin? But Dylan Larkin won't say yes, right? Even, like, now there's a change in Detroit, and I don't know if things get different there. But, you know, what the Sabres want to do versus what they say they can do are two different things. They would have gone to this offseason not expecting to pick fourth overall and make a trade and pick fourth overall. What did they want to do? Sign Byram. What do they want to do? Keep Tuck. So we could talk all we want about the things that they tout and that they want, the things they're saying they like, but we know a number of things that have happened are not things they wanted.
Right. That's that is true, and that's a very fair point. But it
which
just,
is normal. Like that's
right,
normal.
That's,
like,
that's the business. Mm-hmm. That's how this all goes. But to me, that the touting of the young kids is not a facade. It wouldn't logically make sense with how they're operating, even when you're comparing the two, like what they're saying versus what they're doing, all of that. To me, everything that they say and what they're doing lines up to they think these kids are going to do something for them next year, and you do not block that off for a mid-30s guy that's going to play for you for 1 year. It's just not how a manager would operate, in my, at least I wouldn't think. And maybe that's how, you know, Yarmo's done some crazy stuff. He kept Bob and Panarin and let him go.
He has done
some
like, stuff.
Maybe that's something he's thinking, I'm going to throw a curveball. But I would be stunned if we see any of those guys touch Rochester, at least to start. Maybe if one of them, you know, comes up and really has a hard time, you could see him go back. But I would be shocked and pretty disappointed.
Dismayed?
Yeah, because that means at that point, okay, so you didn't go get a bigger guy, a veteran guy, to replace Tuck, and your thing that you have been planning on replacing Tuck can't even play in the league.
Right.
I'm in a bad place. Sorry, but, like, you don't get to try to, like, I don't really care about Dax and Rudolph anymore if that's where we're at. Like, that we're in trouble. And so that to me would just be a massive, massive issue if that's where they got to.
Right, like, you have to do... I mean, it could be you're waving Tyson Kozak and Justin Danforth knowing, like, we just know we're going to lose these guys. Mm-hmm. But whatever, because we need to make sure the kids are here and also playing, right? Like, that's another part of it, is there is what you do with the roster management of it. There also is what you do with the lineup. And if they don't send anybody out and Kane were to sign today, who is not playing on opening night? If they don't run into injuries, and even if they've run into an injury now,
you still
have a hard decision to make if you have an injury. Who is that player going to be? Jason Zucker? Or is that going to be Krebs? Is it going to be one of these guys that I couldn't sign Tuck to more millions of dollars to because I had to keep him?
Right.
Like, that is where their depth is, it's nice to have, and it's a surplus, but there's overkill. It is like looking at an NFL draft board and saying, well, 57th-round picks are the same as a first-round pick. Well, guess what you can't do? You can't have 57th-round picks added to your roster.
Right.
It's nice to have nine guys that can all play really good roles in your bottom six. You don't need nine of them. You can't have them all play at the same time. So I think a trade has to come with it. And I just wonder that if there's no Hellebuck trade, would they get to a place where they would make a seller's trade just to clear a spot for a kid?
Flip Quinn for a first and then Kane and Hugo?
Like, right. For Kane, really.
Is that what you're – like, you want to trade Quinn for Kane one for one? Like, that's what we're talking about? I don't know.
What about – does that have to be him? Can it be Zucker?
Sure. That maybe I'd be slightly more interested in because Zucker's just Zucker, whereas Quinn could feasibly still have a little room for improvement.
I'm replacing a mid-30s one-year contract guy with another
late 30s
one-year contract guy, except this one is going to fill a role on the power play that I need more so.
Yeah.
Zucker's the net front guy. I can replace that. Yeah. Like that. He honestly
got five net front guys.
I think he's a great guy to have in the room. He's been a part of their leadership group the last 2 years. He has answered the bell on everything the last 2 years for this team. He is one of the guys I don't see a role for this year or a need for. He could play. He could be in the lineup. He could score 20 goals. But they can't replace Zucker.
Wouldn't you rather have Östlund doing what he's doing in most cases?
Like, I would.
Playing the role. Second line, left winger, right winger, like whatever. Like playing that, those minutes in those opportunities.
Maybe, but now you're...
He's also a vibes guy, which would be tough.
I was going to say, like, now, maybe this team has aged to a point where they don't need this as much, but now... Who has left the team if I do that? Talk Zucker Byram?
That's a lot.
But that's a lot of veterans.
But I'm only doing that to replace him with Kane, basically.
Right.
But that's a new guy in the room that may not have the same sort of command. I think Zucker and Byram, all three of them, Zucker, Byram, and Tuck, maybe were three of the 5 to 7 biggest voices in that room.
Right.
And that would be big. I think before you do that, like I would be more comfortable doing that after one more year of these young guys being up and playing and getting comfortable in the league.
This is where, you know, they finally ended the drought, and for a long time they had to compete against or fight back getting booed at home because fans are mad about 14 years of playoff droughts, blah blah blah. I mean, if they're down 2-0 at the end of the second period in the opener, they might get booed. There are expectations now.
Right.
Now there are legit expectations. Now you're getting booed for a different reason. Not to say, like, we're already going to boo them. But there's honeymoon, and then there's, all right, this team is supposed to be good and supposed to win now, and you got more ticket-buying customers in there. I'm just
– yeah.
I wonder how much they feel like they'll need – you know, hey, now we've graduated to where the boos aren't – we're mad about 15-year boos. Now the boos are – come on, let's go.
You're supposed to be better than this. Get it together. Right.
So this team is not going to just have like an easy life of no expectation. Also, they spoiled us that last season when they finished, what, like 36-9?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. Like,
right. Yeah.
We got pretty used to seeing them win.
If there are injuries, if there's adversity, how important is it to have somebody in the room that's, you know, the veteran type guy? I mean, when they got Zucker and Greenway, I know they thought that was important. And those guys played important roles. So... 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Mike in Connecticut up on the Bills. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. Good.
So I haven't called in a while, and we're inching closer to football. I just, every morning, you know, I'm seeing Jeremy Fowler's list, and I think it's, I don't want to say the word is pathetic, because I'm not mad at the executives and the scouts and the coaches, because that's their opinions, but I find it hard to believe that, like, people say, you know, the Bills are only going to have Josh Allen and James Cook that are represented on these lists of rankings. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe Cole Bishop has an outside shot, but it's hard to believe that the Bills have the best roster, a top five roster in football, yet they only have two players that are probably going to be in the top 100 and two, maybe three players that are listed. And, you know, it's, hopefully we have guys that can take the next step. I'm kind of curious who you think could be one player on each side of the ball that can take that next step. But, you know, I can't help but think, and this is, you know, I'm joking when I say this, but it's almost like I'm watching the Flex Tape commercial when it's like they just slap Josh Allen on the Bills and everything's all fixed.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So Jeremy Fowler's top 10 players each position. You know, the Bills have not appeared yet in an NFL top 100, and we expect Cook and Allen to be there.
Yep.
But at corner, a guy that we think is really, really good, Christian Benford, did not make the executives' top 24. Mm-hmm. And at wide receiver, DJ Moore, one of their big additions, did not make the top 24. And Bradley Chubb was not mentioned. I didn't see any honorable mention. Best defensive, best edge, nobody.
Nope.
Like, they're not getting a lot of love. Dawkins was on this list, right?
Yep.
The top offensive lineman for Jeremy Fowler.
Ed Oliver was the very last defensive tackle under others receiving votes, which would have been like 24th out of 24 guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking.
Maybe that was it. There wasn't many beyond that. Dawkins was mentioned, though, in the tackles list.
Yes, yes. Let me find he was honorable mention. Okay, I'm looking for I'm exactly pretty sure where he was.
Because there was a quote in there about an NFC executive talking about his ability, but also that he lacks consistent effort, and you don't get the quotes if you're an others receiving vote guy.
Dawkins was honorable mention. Spencer Brown was also receiving votes.
Okay.
So you've got spots on your line where guys are getting a little bit of love. But I think it's not all that surprising. The league, this we saw this when they fired McDermott and they kept the GM. And the owner said, good coaching, great roster. The reaction from the league was, great roster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a good roster.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of great players, but great roster. There weren't too many people that thought that to be the case. Now,
and the coach wasn't one of them.
No, the coach Sean McDermott did not think
it was a great roster.
Right. So I don't find it surprising. Today, PFF has their top 24, mm-hmm. Top 32 wide receivers ahead of the season. Top 32.
I feel like Moore should make that list. Somewhere between like 24 and 32.
He did not.
Okay. Did Shakir?
No.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, maybe. You know, Yak.
No.
Maybe they wanted a Yak guy in there somewhere.
Shakir, I say this lovingly, is more likely to make it as a top 32 running back. Like... it's one of the big things about this season. Like, is Khalil Shakir going to be a receiver again?
All right.
Now, the top 32 receivers, and actually there's an honorable mention for Tyreek Hill at 33. So, I mean, 33 receivers, and your big guy that you're paying big money and traded a second-round pick for is not on the list. I think he can get back in there.
And I don't know if the caller's referencing, there was a, before all the Jeremy Fowler, like, by position pieces, there was a... It was a collective. Maybe it was Fowler, and it was like Seth Walder, yes, Aaron Schatz, Mike Clay, all contributing on ESPN, ranking every roster in the NFL. And you might have opened up that list and gone, oh, look, the Bills are number 4. I thought, like, oh, yeah, great roster.
Yeah.
And under strength, biggest strength, there's like 7 lines about what the strength of the roster is. It's all about Josh Allen. It's the quarterback. If you're counting the quarterback... in the roster, which, I mean, he is a part of the roster, then, yeah, it's a great roster. And if you take the quarterback out of it and try to evaluate, okay, what am I around this guy, they are not the 4th best roster in football. Probably, they are not near the 4th best roster in football.
It's probably middle of the road.
Contemporaries are saying that.
Yeah. Did you see Stevie Johnson, who had to be kidding when he ranked the receiver groups in the NFL?
I saw his A.J. Brown Shakir takes or tweets, but I did not see.
The A.J. Brown Shakir
takes. He was just comparing, like, you know, targets and catches, and, you know, Shakir catches all of his balls in the line of scrimmage. So, never mind. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
No, I had not seen this list.
Okay. Well, he tweeted that the number 1 receiving group in the league is Seattle, and that number 2 is the Bills.
Yeah, the Bills are not number
2. No.
No offense, but the Bills are not. They're not 2nd. No. In no way, shape, or form.
He's also, of course, he's working with Keon, so he's trying to like pump up Keon. And like, he's becoming a believer. He predicted Keon 6,808 touchdowns, which, that's a heavy touchdown season, but 60 catches, 800 yards. I don't think it's impossible. I think it could happen. It'd be on the very high end.
I mean, I would be impressed because I don't even know that he's in line to get 60 targets in this offense. So if he gets 60 catches, he's a 100-target receiver now all of a sudden.
Yeah, right.
And, wow, that would be growth if he turns into a 100-target receiver in this offense.
Could also just be that they decide to really feed him. Like, I mean, right before he got benched Miami, the comment from Joe Brady, according to the broadcast, was they have to find a way to feed him.
Right.
Like that happened during the season last year.
I would be more convinced if he had a season like that he truly went out and actually earned it. That they're not force-feeding him. Like, you get 60 catches and 800 yards after the first 2 years you had, and they've added DJ Moore to the offense, then, unless it's like everybody around him got hurt, and he was the only show in town, and the only guy they could throw the ball to, and that's why he got that stat line... If Moore is out there and Kincaid is out there and there aren't really these big injuries all around the offense and he goes out and has 60 catches, he earned that. I would guess. I don't think they are just handing him 100 targets after the way the first 2 years went. He's got to go out and he's got to earn it to some degree to do it for a whole year. Even if they go in thinking like we're going to prop him up and we're going to give him every opportunity, how long does that last?
Well, we did see last year he got targets that he did not earn.
At the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
But again, how long does that last? Last year, it didn't. This year, will it go on forever? Right now, Joe Brady is taking the approach, I'm the best thing that's ever happened to Keon Coleman. But if 7 games into the year, nothing is different, what do? You can't just do it the whole season. You're going to have playoffs. You're going to have Super Bowl aspirations to worry about at some point. You're going to have a trade deadline. Like, there would be a deadline on giving Coleman opportunity after opportunity, and there's no way that it's the entire season that they would do that.
803-0550. When we return, should you go outside today? How do you handle this? Patrick Hammer's going to give us the forecast on smoke. We got smoke again. So, yeah, that stinks, but it's happening. 803-0550 to join us on the Patrick Kane conversation, on that Bills conversation about the roster if you want it as well on WGR.
Poro, Olmo, the return, Pedro Poro!
John Strong, my favorite. Spain 2, France 0. Ugh. It's been a good ride. I'm not officially resigning from this pool, but you know, listen to me. Like, I rationalize every loss, favorite teams, bets, fantasy team, like, well, you know, this is why, of course this is going to happen. I'm not ready to go that far because France was the favorite and the game is not over. But to win in Survivor, you play in football Survivor pools, maybe, where you've got to pick a winner every week. I mean, you have to dodge a lot of bullets. You have to win, to use another cliche, a lot of coin flips. And there's just no other way to do it. So I've been lucky so far, and maybe it's about to break. Spain 2, France nothing. 72nd minute. There you go. There's your soccer update from me, Mr. Soccer. Here's Zach with me. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Mike. Nice talking to you here.
You too. Uh-oh, I can't hear you. Try me again. Bad connection. Soccer is the one sport where, more than any other sport, a call gets made by the referee and both teams are mad. You don't really get that in the NFL. A call is made, one team is mad, not two. But so many times you watch a soccer game and there was like, you know, there's some sort of a collision and call for a free kick. But the team that was, if you will, victimized, thinks it should have been a card. So they're mad that it isn't a card. And the first team, you know, or the first team is mad that it wasn't a card. The second team is mad that it was anything, that it was even a foul. So you have so many times in a soccer game where the camera goes to the referee and players from both teams are screaming at him. That can't be fun. How do I win here as a ref? If I make a call and both teams are upset, you throw your hands up, like I kind of just did. Like, what do I do? Baseball, here's the play at second, safe. Well, the second baseman's mad because he thinks he tagged him. The base runner is not. He's happy with it. And I roll my eyes a lot at these youth games that I go to because people just cannot be objective. Not everybody, but a lot of people just cannot be objective. I was standing next to parents at this last game I was at in Delaware on Saturday, and I've got parents from each team, my son's team and the other, on each side of me. And it's just like absolutely not even flexible in the slightest if there's a call that goes against your kid's team. I just can't relate to it. I want my son's team to win. These are my friends. This is my group. But if it's a foul, it's a foul, probably. If it's a slash to the head, it's a slash to the head. Like, we really don't have to try so hard to defend our guys. And if I'm an official, you're not helping because a piece of me wants to turn that back on you. on the sideline, if you're going to complain about what I think was an obvious infraction by your team, I would probably have a tough... I mean, I used to be an umpire. I would admit to having a tough time not being biased against the team whose parents are just ragging on me for calls that I know were right. Like, just... You're only saying that because it's your kid. I mean, good for you for being a proud dad, but come on. But soccer, though, these plays... Both teams are mad at the ref for the same thing. No other sport maybe has that. I don't know. Steve is here. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how's it going, Shope? Thank you for your time, sir.
You're welcome.
So I got a question. I've been listening to a lot of Joe's podcast, Locked on Sabres. And
are they good?
I kind of get this. Yeah, it's pretty good.
All right, cool. Good for him.
Yeah. No, and you know, it kind of sparked my mind about how absolutely similar this feels, where the Sabres have all these pieces and they also lost a lot of key pieces. It's very similar to what happened with the 2016 Bills, 2017, where we had this turnover and everyone's getting traded and we're wondering, well, okay, we made it back to the playoffs, right? Like, are we actually looking at a 2 to 3 year mini rebuild? And we believe, hey, we still got Tage, we still got Dahlin, and we can just sneak into the playoffs here and there, but the goal is to get to that point where you're just an absolute powerhouse. Because you knew the Tuck deadline was coming. You knew the Bo Byram deadline was coming. And here we are. We're sitting here and we're trying to figure it all out. I don't know if I'm sold on this idea, is what I'm getting at, of, yeah, it's Stanley Cup or bust this year and the next year. I feel like it's going to be – we really got to push for the third year from now because of all the – young talent we have. What do you think about that?
I don't think in hockey it can really necessarily ever be Stanley Cup or bust. It's too hard. I think in the NFL, by contrast, Steve, I would say NFL, you get to the one seed, like you sort of run things in your conference and get to the one, and then you have two home games to win, and then you're there. You're in the championship round. Like two home games after a bye, which is a big benefit. Two home games to win against teams that didn't play as well as you, and then you're there. Hockey is just too hard. It's just I think it's way harder to really think in terms of the Stanley Cup. I mean, think about these great teams. I mean, Colorado this year was for what? Three quarters of the season, two thirds of the season was all time good. And the season is so long. And then you get in and teams you're playing against are not that much worse. They're kind of on your level, and you get a bounce against you and you're out. So I don't think of the Sabres in terms of Stanley Cup or bust. I think they're in a great spot. I don't think there's really been that much turnover. And I kind of still think there's a big shoe left to drop with them, but I don't have to be right. So what I would want for my team, Bills, Sabres, whoever, is to be set up to be a contender for years to come. And the Bills are that. And the Sabres are set up to be that.
I guess it's when Joe says, oh, like losing Tuck, I would have gone the other way. Like I was always on the boat of re-signing him because you're basically trying to fill in the gap with three other players. It's like, well, you're also playing the game of age, you know, and speed and the lack thereof. You know, the talent that we needed really badly to show up in that last round of the playoffs when Tage was non-existent. Because
you needed Tuck to do that. You needed Tuck for that, actually.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. He just disappears. But that's kind of where I have this differentiating view of, okay, like, we just need to completely move on. Obviously, we have no choice, right?
Well, what do you want them to do?
Well, I want the Sabres to just have a convincing 3-year plan. Like, hey, we're going to have all the talent in the world for the next couple of years that we need to develop and just stay competitive. But in the third or fourth year from now, I mean, see them in the Stanley Cup, but not sneak in, right? Like we're hitting game sevens or no, like we need a win series that you're just a convincing playoff contender, you know, kind of like, I hate to use this analogy all the time. Cause you know, being a Buffalo fan, you're like, oh, let's talk about the Bills too to give the contrast. But it's like, it really is kind of the same. And you would, that's why everyone's disappointed with how the Bills have turned out. It's because you have all this talent and you have had plenty of talent to make it to that next step, but they constructed that over a couple of years and they knew it was going to be 3 to 4 years from when Josh Allen started to pop off that everything was going to start gelling. And I feel like we're in that window, but we still have way more time because hockey is a completely different game.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Thank you, Steve. Like, I am not somebody who feels like you have to ramp up to win. A lot of times teams win and they did not ramp up. And then you have teams in hockey like Carolina that have kind of been about as good for 10 years in a row. And then they got there. That's what you want to have happen with the Bills is like one of these years it breaks for them. The best you can do, I think, in any sport is to build the foundation and get to the playoffs and take your chances. And you hope for the right matchups. You hope for the bye week. You hope for the bounces. There's only so much of that, though, that you can control. So I don't think of the Sabres as a team that's like, okay, well, maybe this year they can take another step but then lose. I mean, they were in the final, among the final five teams playing. Any team in that situation has to be thinking about the top. And I believe that they are. I mean, to say that I need to see that there's a 3 or 4 year plan, first of all, we have no idea that there isn't one. And I mean, there probably are these discussions internally. And I mean, I think it's sort of like, it's kind of self-evident. I mean, you have a Sabres team that's really young or in its prime. Most, if not all, of their key men are now, especially with Tuck gone, are not age, they're not age concerns about them. So you've got a good thing. I think what needs to happen or we'd want to have happen here before the season starts is a big fish, is some sort of catch that makes it more believable that they can repeat last year. And then, you know, get to the playoffs and see what happens. I mean, you're playing a 99-point team in the first round or 100. You're playing a 106-point team in the second round. How much can you expect to necessarily go your way? I mean, even the Boston series was close. So, I don't know. That's all I want to do. I want to be good enough where I can confidently expect to get in. And then after that, hopefully I'm not injured. Hopefully I'm playing a team that doesn't have a hot goalie. I mean, I can't really control that. Football, it's the one seed is such a game changer versus hockey. I mean, imagine it would have been Carolina, I guess, in the East, but somehow if the team with the most points in the conference got the first round off. I mean, what an advantage. Rest versus rust. Sure. Let me find out. Give me 2 weeks off before the season. Actually, who was it that actually kind of got that? Was it Carol? It was Carolina. As the playoffs went on, they crushed Philadelphia in the second round and had to wait around for Montreal-Buffalo to get Montreal. And there was like a long break. Well, how did it go? They crushed Montreal too. Like just, it's different in that way. One thing about it, one of many, many perhaps that are different in terms of the formats. I think the Sabres are fine. I'd like for them from two standpoints. One, for their outlook as a cup contender, a possible cup winner. And two, which is not nothing to me, if I were to run the Sabres, this wouldn't be irrelevant, is a star power piece that would further energize an already awakened and excited fan base. And that's Hellebuck. If it's not Dylan Larkin or someone else, I mean, it's Hellebuck for sure. We would argue about if he's too old, but we wouldn't really want to argue about it. We'd kind of want to wrap that up quickly and enjoy one of the absolute rare moments in Buffalo sports history where one of our teams was able to attract a player of his status in the league. And they're not getting him through free agency. I mean, the Sabres, if not also the Bills, are never signing the biggest stars in their sports when they become free agents. This is the only way to do it. You could draft them, but the only way you get a superstar, if you're Buffalo, is to trade for him. And I think that might be possible here, and I've come around to liking the idea. Thank you, Steve. Lines open for you at 803-0550. I'm Mike Shope. This is WGR.
Hour number two, rolling along here. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Also, big news for me, I'm breaking in new glasses.
Do they?
They work. I needed a new prescription. So that's what I mean by I'm breaking
them
in.
How long have you been going without the right prescription?
I've done that. Just the eyes get worse. It's been a little while since I've gone.
Getting worried.
This happens every time for like at least a day, day and a half. I have to like kind of break them in and everything feels kind of weird. And I have glasses for distances. I can see up close. I can't see distances. And like any time like I'm looking normally where I would, it almost takes a second for my eyes to adjust. And I'm not liking this at all. I am not liking it one bit. It's how I ended my vacation was getting my glasses. I got the text while I was driving back from Syracuse. I was like, oh, perfect. Great. Let's go do that real quick.
Great. So it's kind of funny because Bulldog was talking about his glasses issues sometimes last week. And mm-hmm. I'm like, what's up with that chair and glasses problems?
You know, it is what it is.
You nerds.
Tim Graham sits here after me. I don't think he has glasses.
Now I got to ask him.
Yeah. Me, Mike, and Chris all have glasses.
Yep.
So that's that entire show.
Jeremy does.
I think Jeremy does. I don't think Joe
does. Joe
does
not. Oddly enough, I do. I choose to wear contacts instead.
Yep. You decide to do that craziness.
I poke my eye every morning. Hey, I can't do that. You know what? There's no better way to wake up. The best part of waking up is poking your eye.
I guess that's true. I'd rather splash cold water on my face or get in the shower than poke my eye. But to each their own.
No, I'm just thinking about all those stupid Folgers meme.
We all have facial hair. So I guess that's that. Okay, yeah.
All right, we're manly. We got facial hair.
I only keep it because I look like a child when I shave it. I mean, it's true for many people.
I actually
when you don't have facial hair, you look much younger.
The facial hair that I have,
mm-hmm.
mostly because it's a direct indication of how busy I am.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But it will get to a point where it is unforgivably itchy and I cannot take it anymore. And it doesn't take long. It's like usually a week. And I'm like scratching my face at a constant basis. We're getting near that point right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a direct indicator of how busy I am and how much of a life I don't have.
Right. I will forget. I don't have the time.
It's a direct correlation. It's okay. So Derek's cooked right now. Mm-hmm. Why? Because he's got a fuzzy face.
I get them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would love to not have this constantly growing in. You mentioned like how baby face you look. And I say, don't get self-conscious about that.
No, it's totally how I feel.
But also, it's do what you like to do there, Zachary.
And I've debated it quite often. I've just like if I have a long weekend and I won't necessarily have to see people if I hate it, just like shave it all off.
Do you like having it there right now?
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine for right now.
Okay.
It's fine.
Is it a look you like?
6 out of 10.
That's better than half.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's fine. It is. I have this look all the time. 6 out of 10.
The mundane life of America.
Yeah,
right here.
The mundane life. I have my beard. It's fine.
It's tolerable.
All right, you had more hockey questions for me. What else we
yes,
got?
Yes, I did. So let's get into that sort of stuff. So it's kind of funny. It's the more things change, the more they stay the same. You leave and come back. And so when you left, there were Connor Hellebuck rumors. And now you come back and there's more Connor Hellebuck rumors.
Yeah, they're still there. Yeah,
it hasn't gone away. I'm getting to a point where I like, irritatedly, I'm like, somebody do something. Get the deal done over the goal line because I'm getting mad at seeing more reports and rumors and nothing happening. Because it's like, okay, it's clear. All you guys want to get this done. Can we just do it now? But it's also my fault mm-hmm. because I've now suspected that this deal won't get done during the summer. It will be when everyone's back for training camp.
Oh, so you think it'll be a super late?
So I put a pox on myself for thinking it's going to be a different timeline, only to learn I can't tolerate it. So it's my fault.
I'm in a weird spot with Hellebuck. I'd love to add him. I was never the biggest fan, though.
Oh, it's a luxury add. Don't get me wrong.
I was never the biggest fan of the goalie addition. I always wanted the forward. They went more defenseman, but I get it when you lost Bo Byram as well. I understand that. They're going to put a lot of faith in the young guys, so I did want that safety, essentially that safety blanket for the young forward core to have a Vezina-winning goalie who hopefully is not on the downspin of his career. I know he had arguably a career worst year, but there were still signs of like, all right, Connor Hellebuck is still there, and if he plays with Alex Lyon, he's not playing 60 games a year in the regular season, that could really work out for him. That could really be a boost to the later stages of his career. And then free agency passed. And the no trade protections, not full no trade protections, but no trade protections were put in for Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. And I think Ryan McLeod was another one of those guys that we were talking about with that. And now I know I saw David Pagnotta that you know, he still thinks that this is likely. I saw that there was a Winnipeg reporter that thinks it's like 95% likely and that Buffalo makes the most sense. My issue now is, okay, who are the Sabres trading them that makes sense? Like, they were already looking for a number two center. That's kind of Ryan McLeod. They probably want a young player. Roddy Mirka made a ton of sense after Daxon Rudolph was traded, or excuse me, after Daxon Rudolph was drafted. And then they're probably going to need a goalie. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen made a ton of sense there. He's been pretty good. You don't have to play him 50, 60 games, but they brought in a backup goalie on a pretty hefty price. So a lot of it was starting to make sense of, yeah, Hellebuck's going to leave, but then certain deadlines were hit, and now I don't really know who they would even add. Would they want to add Alex Lyon?
Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen made sense for the Sabres to deal. I think signing Stuart Skinner to that contract kind of makes that a bit of a, I guess I'd call it an additional reason if Luukkonen would have Winnipeg on the NTC.
Is I'm not actually the full starter.
I'm not
here.
The guy.
We're splitting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I'm not the guy for another player that's trying to revitalize his starting career as an NHL goaltender. No, I'd want you to put me somewhere else because I have the ability to say no because Winnipeg's already not a good destination when they're good.
Right. They kind of have. They're almost like the Canadian Columbus, where it always seems like you might have two or three great years. Eventually, everyone will want out.
Or, and stop me if you heard this before, Buffalo before this year.
I should pause, though, on everyone will want out. It literally is just they can't add anybody else. Scheifele's been there. Connor's been there. Hellebuck's been there. Morrissey's been there. They just can't get more to get over the hump.
They can't acquire more. Yeah. And it's oftentimes kind of tough to see Winnipeg trade for a player that has a no move.
Yeah.
Because it's a tough location. It really is. It's unfortunate.
It has made this very difficult.
And now, and again, the main reason I think, and you've said it, you put this in my head enough that I'm really there to where I've really started to grow on it, which is it signifies the end of Kevin Cheveldayoff's run if he trades Connor Hellebuck. And until the goalie puts more pressure on the front office publicly,
mm-hmm.
I don't see the need to get it done if I'm Cheveldayoff. I can try to run it back one more year and maybe trade him at the deadline instead.
Right. If we're bad, I'll trade him at the deadline. And that will be the end. And maybe for half a season, I can convince the owner.
I can at least try to get one more run at this and try to keep my long-term stay on this. Viggo Bjork looks like he's ready to go. My 8th overall pick. Totally justified in why I held out on Buffalo there.
Yep. The
selection that Winnipeg makes suddenly is ready to go. Okay. That's a win. And Bjork was a player that a lot of people were looking at as like the next forward outside of McKenna. And it's like, it's McKenna, Stenberg, but Bjork's going to surprise somebody.
Swedish Zach Benson.
Dogging him. All right, so he's going to get his 9, and he might be able to just play in Manitoba instead. Or he might stick in the NHL right away. But he's not overseas. That's a young player on a team that desperately needs one. And I haven't had to trade Hellebuck to do it. And maybe he adds more depth to the 3 players that were actually good last year in Connor, Scheifele, and Morrissey. Winnipeg, I feel like they should be wanting to drag their feet as much as possible. But the longer they do it, the worse the return will get. They had their best deal lined up for them at the NHL draft. They did not take it. And because it's a medicine that you'd have to take and assume that Connor, Morrissey, or Scheifele in any combination storms into your office after you trade Hellebuck, unless they have the pressure put on them, I'm not bothering if I'm Winnipeg. I'm not bothering to do it unless the goalie demands it publicly.
See, and I think this is where it gets weird is because I think the Sabres are maybe in the same mindset of, that's fine. We'll roll back with Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and Alex Lyon.
The Sabres have more leverage than Winnipeg does. That's the thing.
And the Sabres, some fans don't. I'm leery about it, but they really love their young talent. Yuri Kulik is a complete wild card, right? Like, he is maybe the wild card. But Helenius, how great his end of the season was. Austin, right? Like, we've talked about these guys endlessly. So you have two teams that are kind of sitting there going, I'm not desperate. I can just hang out. And that's where I think you're absolutely right. It has to be the player. It has to be Hellebuck going, no, I'm done. Get me out of here, and I want to go to Buffalo.
And it has to be public pressure. It's not something that he can ask for behind closed doors at this point. It has to be very public. It has to get ugly. Ready? It has to be Dylan Larkin, but it makes sense.
Yeah, Larkin also didn't move.
Yeah, no, and more on that in a moment. But it has to be something where there's a public demand, like trade me to Buffalo or Carolina or even Jersey. Because they're a talented team that just needs a goaltender. And I need it to be get done. And I'm going to say, I want out of Winnipeg. He doesn't even have to say where. He just has to say it out loud. But Winnipeg, there's probably an unwillingness to actually get the deal done. Buffalo has all the leverage. We don't need to do this. It's a luxury. It's a damn good luxury, but it's a luxury nonetheless. So I don't need to move my guys. Why would I give in to your demands? You first asked for Zach Benson. How dare you?
Oh, I forgot about that one.
No, right. People don't forget.
It's a good start. Now you got to pull it down. Yeah. Although it seems like Cheveldayoff kind of didn't.
No. Like, he said, I want to pick at 4 and 8. Yeah. Okay, toddler, you can stand in the aisle holding your breath.
But that is also...
I'm not giving into that demand. Get out of here.
That is also, though, a GM, and whether it's right or wrong, I think this is the case, though. It's a GM that knows if Hellebuck goes, I have to get the world for him. Because if I don't, it's over. And I don't get to reap the benefits of, you know, adding a first-round pick and a prospect. I'm probably out of a job by the deadline.
That's where it is. I don't get to keep my job.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the only motivation at that point. It's not about what you can do with the team afterward. It's if I don't get a good return for Hellebuck, I'm out on my tuchus.
And that's always the tough thing for, I think, fans and a team. There's that disconnect. And there's always going to be. Like, I'm not saying this is right or wrong. Like, this is always what it's going to be. Fans are with the team 24/7, 365. So for us, we're like, yeah, go get the prospects. We'll be good in 2 or 3 years. But a GM can sit there and go, cool, I got you the prospects. I'm going to get fired this year. I don't get the guys in 2 years.
Congrats to the other guy.
And look, we'd all love for GMs to willingly, coaches, GMs, whoever, fall on their sword. You know, for the greater, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. That is what it is. It's why a lot of these GMs have to hit the rebuild right the first time. Because you maybe won't get a second chance at it. You won't. You hope you do well enough that you can sort of retool on the fly, kind of rebuild as you go, maybe make a few savvy moves here or there, and you picked up multiple first-round picks, and you can go from there. But most of these GMs don't get that second run. And so this is where, for Cheveldayoff, you know, we're also all talking as well, even before a lot of the trade rumblings got hot and heavy, is the return for a goalie ever all that good? The answer is no.
No, not really. It's actually kind of a big deal when they land you a first-round pick, remember? Martin Jones and Robin Lehner in the same draft get traded for first-round picks. And it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, oh my God, you paid what for a goalie? That's relatively, for those two, it was unproven, but it's also why goalies don't move. You hold on to them until the bitter end, typically. Bitter being the term. It is very often an unfortunate thing. Columbus does it with Bobrovsky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Columbus does it multiple times, actually.
With a few of their guys. But that's the one where you know he wants to go on the move, and Columbus goes, we have to hold on here. Because the return for a goalie on a rental is going to be dismal. Probably. Oh, and we're trying to make the playoffs. And then he goes to Florida. It's an awful contract to start. But Bobrovsky eventually does win 2 cups. But at the beginning with Florida, that's an albatross.
It does eventually work, but yeah, you're right. To start, it is not a good decision.
Carey Price,
yeah, it's
when
bad.
I say the bitter end,
oh,
his career, he gets one Stanley Cup run out of it that they lose, and then it's over.
Yeah, Price's entire career is kind of, oh, I'm on like the worst era of Montreal hockey. And I happen to be maybe one of their better goalies.
But he makes it one of, but he makes the best of it.
Yeah.
Most of his career, he is a very good goaltender who goes through playoff dramas left and right.
Mm-hmm. Especially early in his career.
But then it's over. It's kind of hard if I'm Winnipeg to get rid of this goaltender because I have to look at this era as it's over. And that can mean that I'm out of a job. It could mean I'm starting over. And the core that I built failed. And I would imagine it's really hard for a person to willingly admit that defeat unless it is forced upon him.
Especially to, this is specifically for Winnipeg. It's a year after a President's Trophy. And they did win a playoff round in that President's Trophy season. Like they had some success.
I mean, it shouldn't have come down to what it did in that first round, but
I know. Believe me. I agree. But like that's the thing. It's gonna be tough to tell a team realistically, a year after winning the President's Trophy, yeah, we're tearing it all down. We're waving the white flag. Like that, it's even hard to sell to a fan base, even though you can almost always sell to fan bases in hockey, in baseball. The prospects are coming, right? Look at the young core. Watch AAA or the AHL. Like look at all of this. It's much easier to sell. That would be really difficult for Winnipeg. So I can understand them dragging their feet. I even said it when the Benson stuff came out. I get it. Like that's where you start and you bring it down. Chevalier seems to have not really brought it down all that much. There also isn't like a bidding war for Hellebuck. We all kind of were like waiting for the bidding war to start, and it never did. Carolina had their moment in the sun. New Jersey, it felt like, was like maybe going to do it the day that they entered the race. That never happens. San Jose might be involved somewhat in the shadows. We don't really know.
But that's will Hellebuck waive for a team that hasn't quite yet broken through.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo can at least say that they now have.
Yeah. In reality, though, it looks like it's just Buffalo. It's Buffalo and Winnipeg staring at each other, seeing which one blinks first.
And that's where it is of like, there's leverage. Like, I still think Winnipeg still has no leverage. But Buffalo is still the only team in the market, so Winnipeg is going to demand the world. That's where their perceived leverage should be. Buffalo, it's a more of a luxury ad and one that they don't necessarily need to do, and they could be confident walking in with the goaltending tandem for next season. The player that can change, the factor that can change this is the player. Hellebuck has to make it public if it's going to happen at this point, I think. Because then that puts pressure on Winnipeg that they don't feel that they have. The Sabres have no pressure. Winnipeg's trying to leverage them. The Sabres don't need to listen to it. If Winnipeg suddenly has to get a diminished return because they're told to, changes the game. All of a sudden, Buffalo, the only perceived buyer who doesn't want to pay the king's ransom, then all of a sudden it's reduced down to the Jack's ransom, the prince's ransom. It's not as much anymore.
No, and then to kind of wrap this up, your original point, if it's a deal at training camp, it won't be a massive move. I mean, it'll be a massive move in the sense of, oh, Connor Hellebuck's now with Buffalo.
It's not the return that they would have wanted because the player would have put the pressure on.
I hope that happens. Really, I want it to happen just because it felt like we were in for such a fun offseason with the Sabres. And there were moments, right? The fourth over, we'll always have the fourth overall night pick. Or the trade.
The Zellweger trade.
We'll always have that stuff.
But also the Zellweger trade, mm-hmm. It's almost a precursor to what should be.
Yeah.
The excitement after that trade is, oh my God, Buffalo's like really up in this on the arms race.
Everything leading up to the draft was so fun. It was exciting.
It's the Sabres' turn.
Yeah. So I hope something happens that we can all kind of put an exclamation point on the offseason and really put a cap to what was a wonderful season by the Sabres. You know, really bringing the city back into loving them and embracing them. Everything with the playoffs was so much fun. The last month or so of the season was a joyride because it was just, you know, they're in. We're just waiting for the official announcement. Oh, we're going to win the division. This is incredible. It would really put, I think, an exclamation point on that as they go into the next season.
It would put an exclamation point on what I still think is a good off season.
It's not bad by any means.
It's not bad. It's disappointing, maybe.
Yes.
And I feel like it could be both. It could still be a disappointing off season that there's no major additions. But it's not A, out of a lack of trying, the reports on Hellebuck at the draft. but you also took three players that were not going to sign anything long term, and you flipped them all for assets that actually end up being very valuable for the team's long term future. You move from 27 to 20 via Kesselring. That gets you Morozov, one of the last players on the Sabres list of guys that they wanted to draft in the first round.
Was that in the embedded last night?
It was.
I gotta watch that. I enjoy the draft.
But also, it's the last player that a lot of fans kind of like familiarize themselves with.
I knew Morozov when they were picking at 27.
But that was a pipe dream still.
Yeah, it was like, they like him if he's there.
Really nice if he's there.
When they got 20, it was, all right, it's going to be Morozov.
It's probably going to be Morozov or Novotny.
Yeah.
And then you end up getting the number 4 overall pick by moving a player that I still think Agent Shenanigans played a major factor here, but he got his payday. And he's the number 1 defenseman now in Chicago. He gets what he wants. Sabres got something as well. Really dang good return. Oh, and Jordan Greenway's cap space frees up, so it gets everyone excited again.
It's all about the excitement. We haven't really necessarily had like the big moment, though. That's the frustration.
Well, hang on. Let me give you a little bit more on that excitement, Zach. And not necessarily excitement, but I guess the overall scope of things. But before that, wrapping it up with, then there's Alex Tuch. Can you keep him? Will you keep him? The money freed up. All of a sudden, you can. It's something that is possible now. No, Buffalo makes a push late, but it sounded like Tuch was already out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That is your right. But Zach, in order to get the rest of the offseason done, they did need that $4 million that they shipped off.
Yes, they did.
Their current cap space is 5.1.
Yeah.
So they would not have gotten everything else done, which was obtain and sign Zellweger. You retain Krebs. I mean, Malenstein was done before any of this happened.
But you're able to bring back key depth pieces.
You're bringing back, you chose the depth of the team instead of the top end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, that is what it is at this point. Can you free up some more cap space? Yeah, you could. Outside of the rumors of being in on Hellebuck, is there any left that you need that money for? No.
Not really.
No. This might be the group they go forward with. I'm comfortable with it. I know many people will be disappointed in that. But it is still a good offseason, even if a little disappointing in one aspect.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with it. I'm not thrilled. Honestly, it's because for two seasons we've sort of been wanting them to add a top six forward, both with Adams last year. Mm-hmm. Doan ultimately counts to that, but not really at the time.
We didn't see that coming.
And then this year with Yarmo. Right, there is still stuff that can be done. The rumors won't stop. They will have to move out, obviously, though, some players that you brought up, the cap space they have left. Hellebuck's contract is $8.5 million per year, and they're going to still need some room to make just their daily transactions that they will do during the season.
Which trading Lukanen will get the cap space alone needed to get mm-hmm. Hellebuck. Because you also want to do it as a service to the player. Connor right. Hellebuck's coming in. Sorry, UPL, you're not starting. Therefore, we're going to try to get you somewhere where you can.
Right.
Even
if the Skinner contract at Winnipeg kind of points to...
Even not Winnipeg. I could ship you to Winnipeg or somewhere else. I need to free up that cap space anyway.
Yeah.
And then, hey, they need a forward. Okay, guess what? Cap space for the rest of the season is there. Done. So the Hellebuck trade is the only thing, I guess, that is missing at this point. And even if it doesn't happen, Zach, everyone's struggled with it. While you were gone, the morning show put lines together.
Oh, yeah. I don't know where I'm putting... Before he was signed, I didn't know where I was putting Krebs. Now he is signed. I don't know where I'm putting Krebs.
Well, now he's signed at 4.5.
Yeah,
you're not
right.
Taking him out.
What did I say with Malenstein? What was he at? 3-point-something?
It's 2.9.
2.9. Thank you. I was sitting there like, they just signed into an extension. He's not going to be the extra forward, is he? Like, they're going to put him somewhere. Krebs now, I'm sitting there going... Over four, they're going to put him some. I don't know.
Honestly, it might be Carrick.
Could be Carrick.
Could be Kulik.
They have a Kulik is. They talk about him so positively, but I also sit here and go, you really going to throw him into the fire a year after not playing hockey and he's still under 24 years old?
But also,
are we
if he
sure
forces
you're going to do that,
if he forces the issue at training camp, though,
yeah.
Now what?
Yeah.
Which is why I think training camp is when the Hellebuck deal gets done in addition. Because somebody's going to force the issue at the forward core. And you now have a surplus.
You have a now we sort of have an idea.
Now you have now we have a problem we need to get taken care of. We have a surplus. Somebody's going to go on waivers that shouldn't, and we're going to lose them for nothing. Oh, Winnipeg still might be trading Connor Hellebuck. Hey, let's talk about that again. Hey, how was the cottage? Like,
we're back.
We're back.
Also, was it Frank Saravelli that that he tweeted out the cottage pick, like,
yeah,
almost immediately before we had offer sheets?
Mm-hmm.
What a miss. What a miss, buddy.
I mean, look.
What a miss.
You try to get to the cottage no matter what.
Right? I know vacation time is planned out. I totally get it. But
the season is calling.
Ugh.
And yet the Sabres yesterday, they did like three things.
Right. Some hirings and then
they
some
get Krebs.
Yeah.
They do a minor league trade, which I got to troll everyone with. The Sabres made a trade. No, not that one.
Oh, isn't that the best?
And then bring in John Davidson. So like they were busy yesterday.
They were busy yesterday.
So the cottage season has yet to call to the Buffalo Sabres.
The best thing so far in the offseason is Leo Carlson. The best thing is everyone starting to wrap it up and Philly goes, we want him.
That's
18
right.
million a year.
That saga does close when you oh my god, that whole
it's
saga
like
happens.
Day one.
Yeah, that whole saga happens when you're relatively gone.
It's like day one of me leaving.
Yep.
And I see that and I'm like, ah, let's go, baby.
Yep.
Because I was still in the mood to like kind of work, so I still tweeted out and like somewhat gave my thoughts, but I was also like, I'm shutting down for a little
That's
bit.
Right. I do believe it happened on a Saturday.
It did.
Because it closed on that Friday, which was 6 days, not seven after.
Yeah, I left like a
oh
super
my
villain.
God, you left when the Leo Carlson thing happened.
And I loved it for Philly because I was like, hey, he's not worth $18 million a year. But you know what? Go for it. Make Anaheim blink. And then Anaheim was like, we need him back.
Yeah, it was a malice sign. And you know what? We could talk a little bit more about
so
that. We got to get to a break.
We got that. We've got soccer coming up. And then I also have a horror story from that trip very early on, right around the time Leo Carlson gets the offer sheet. So we'll do that when we come back. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join. This is WGR.